This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and First Financial Tax and Accounting provides signature support for our show. Your number is 877-217-5757. You can send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And this is the first day of our Member Fest, the Fall Member Fest, day one. We don't do this but twice a year, and this is an opportunity to show support for our station and for this hour of programming. Certainly, we look forward to hearing from you this week. 855-893-9753. Click the donate button at wrkf.org, and you'll show your support for a treasure that began on January 18th, 1980 in this community. WRKF has stood tall and proud, a beacon of light in a place where there's a lot more heat than light when it comes to programming of this kind. This is a place where you can get factual information in a way that is appropriately presented. 855-893-9753. We hope to hear from you. And we start with Fred Rayford and Kelvin Hill. They are involved in public works at high levels in our city. Kelvin's the guy who works very closely with Mayor Broome and has a lifetime in industry. He worked for many years for Georgia Pacific, including a stint here, and is a graduate of Georgia Tech. And Fred Rayford, who's been with six different mayors of Baton Rouge and has worked closely with DPW in all of those administrations, Director of Transportation and Drainage, and the six mayors, for those who have forgotten, Woody Dumas, Pat Screen, Tom Ed McHugh, Bobby Simpson, Kip Holden, and now Sharon Weston Broome. And let's begin with you, Fred. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. How you doing, sir?
Doing well. Of course, it's kind of like crime. This is an age-old story that seems to have new wrinkles every time, and now we have some new wrinkles. In fact, I see front page of our paper today. Sharon Broome proposes fee for flood protection. We've got flood issues right now that people are concerned about. Let's start there. What's going on in that realm?
Well, I mean, I will tell you that, first off, we are trying to address all the problems that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis that really impact and cause concern from drainage issues, no question. Our maintenance division does a very good job of trying to the many of the complaints that we get over the months that we deal with every day. I would say most important is that we are to being responsive. Our biggest issue, and I think Mr. Hill will also bring that up, is we just don't have the staffing. We're struggling, just like big businesses are trying to get employees to come work for the city of Baton Rouge. We have about a 30% vacancy rate. And that's not good, particularly in maintenance issues. But certainly I would say that, you know, our goal and objective is to try to address the major issues that impact the drainage systems throughout the parish. And that's one of the reasons I believe Mayor Broome also looked at the American Rescue Act for us to be able to secure $20 million this first round, which is what we're working on currently right now. And we're proposing another $22 million, I think, for the second round of American Rescue Act, which will go to the council on the 27th for approval. Those projects include drainage channels, cleaning, fixing some of the cave-ins that we're dealing with without the parish, looking at cleaning roadside ditches. Biggest thing that I think is the biggest positive what we see from the first program is cleaning the storm drain boxes that about 60,000 are sitting out there, and the many, many miles of line, I mean, I guess, closed conduit that we're looking at doing. That's going to be a big issue for us to deal with.
All right, 877-217-5757. And before we go to Kelvin, Fred grew up in this city and is a graduate of Estruma, class of 73. And the city is much different than it was 50 years ago when you were at Estruma High School. And with time and change and expansion, sometimes there are problems related. Some people believe we've got problems related to construction. What are your thoughts?
Well, certainly, I think from a construction or development standpoint, I would never want to see development stop, but I think we ought to have good development. And from that perspective is, you know, times change, development changes, all type of construction standards change. But that's why we have the Stormwater Master Plan that we're looking at for the big picture, where we need to do what we need to correct now, but where we need to be in the future. And that's something Mayor Broome had instituted and asked for us to get started, and we're on our way with that. In fact, we should be finished with what our recommendations and the plan of how we need to address future growth and development probably by the mid of next year. We can still look at watersheds and look at how we can address development or just problems that we have within the parish currently. And that's what we're evaluating right now to be able to present some information to the mayor and also the Metro Council on how and what we believe can do, what we can do to correct some of the issues that we're dealing with.
All right, 877-217-5757. And we will go to the phones in short order. Talk at talklouisiana.org if you'd like to send an email. And the first couple of emails I'm looking at, this is from Kathleen and from Zach. They both ask about cleanup from Hurricane Ida. Most of us have experienced some slowness, but as Fred says, there's a work shortage right now, and there's a lot of debris to clean up. Kelvin Hill, what are your thoughts about the process as we know it, cleaning up from Ida?
Well, we've been pretty aggressive on the Ida cleanup, Jim. Our, you know, intent was to try to get everything done as quickly as we can. As you know, we were going to have 100% reimbursement from FEMA through October the 10th. So we pushed really hard to get everything up. Right now, we've collected over 700,000 cubic yards against an estimate of about 750,000 cubic yards. And on the daily basis, we've been picking up pretty close to 20,000 cubic yards a day. So we've got excess out there, 73 truck units throughout all areas of the parish. And we should be finishing up our first pass next week.
877-217-5757. There is time to talk with Fred Rayford and Kelvin Hill. Fred, Director of Transportation and Drainage, and Kelvin is Assistant Chief Administrative Officer for Mayor Broome over Department of Public Works. Daniel in South Baton Rouge. Daniel, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. I just wanted to tip my hat to Fred Rayford. I have a Fred Rayford story. He and I used to work at the city, and we got up 2 o'clock in the morning. I was looking for stoppages in the line, and I just tipped my hat to him. I'd always remember him for being a good worker, getting up out of his bed at 2 o'clock in the morning when he had me to go out there and do it. Thank you, sir.
Fred? Well, I appreciate that. You know, when you work in public works, your duties are not just a regular 8-to-5 job, and most people don't realize that. But you got to do what you have to do when it involves dealing with drainage or anything else with the public service. No question about that.
877-217-5757 is your number. And Alondra Villarreal is producing, and we have some time to get in with Fred Rayford and Kelvin Hill on the front lines of public works, and other listeners are talking about traffic, another age-old problem. And Fred, you've seen many iterations of construction and construction and construction. It seems the more we expand that interstate, the more we have the same old, same old. What are our biggest issues moving forward?
Well, certainly, you know, the interstate is an issue, but that is not really necessarily under the control of the city of, you know, Baton Rouge. It's really under DOTD from the state. But we work very closely with the state because it runs through East Baton Rouge Parish. There's a lot of traffic that jumps off on various ramps and locations that create problems for us on other railways, and mostly local railways. So it is important for us to know what's going to take place and what's happening and how we're going to address the traffic in the future. And DOTD has done a good job of that, working with us, making sure that does this impact us on our streets, and actually has stepped up to the point and contributed some funds to our local program, the Move ER program, to help us address particularly the interchanges that need to be improved. And more importantly, I would say, is that some to create new interchanges like at the PQ Lane. Certainly that is one that people talk about a lot, and we're moving forward with that program too. So traffic is going to be an issue. We're working to improve it under the Move ER, from signals, from new capacity projects. But just as important, Jim, because most people don't always look at it this way, the mayor has also wanted to emphasize on pedestrian facilities, making it safe for people to use the roadways for sidewalks, bike lanes, and things like that. Lighting, which wasn't included in many of your programs, We're also going to make sure those are components of this projects.
All right. You mentioned Move BR, and Kelvin, I know you're involved with this. How significant is this, particularly the Stormwater Master Plan?
Well, the Stormwater Master Plan is significant in that it's the first time that we've been able to comprehensive look at overall drainage and flood mitigation concerns for City Parish. We're creating models where we can model how water is going to flow when it hits the ground that will help us understand where we need to place future investments for projects to improve drainage and reduce the flood potential for our citizens. So we're pretty excited about the ability to complete the Stormwater Master Plan.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. We'll have another segment with Fred Rayford and Kelvin Hill working in high levels of public works for the city of Baton Rouge. And we're back after this 90-second pause with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. In just a bit, we'll hear from Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, but we do have some time remaining with Fred Rayford and Kelvin Hill, who are involved with Public Works for the city of Baton Rouge. And the headline in today's Advocate, Broom proposes fee for flood prevention, East Baton Rouge Parish. Mayor President Sharon Weston Broom is proposing a new fee to rake in steady funding to maintain drainage and prevent flooding. Now, we know we have a problem, but Kelvin, you're quoted here. It's $40 million a year. That's a significant amount, and some people are they're wary of another fee, so or another tax, any way you want to term it. How do you present this to have people on board?
Well, basically what we're trying to do, Jim, is we're trying to get our arms around what needs to be done for drainage maintenance across City Parish. There are structural controls that we need to put in place. There are flood controls that we need to enhance. There are infrastructure management gaps that we need to close. And there are some compliance issues that we need to address. And with this additional funding, we'll be able to do that and provide more what we would call drainage protection or flood mitigation for City Parish.
Has it been determined how the money would be raised?
No. Our proposal last night was to take a look at a feasibility study and have a consultant group come in, look at our work, look at the resources required to do that work, compare that to what's going on across the country, and help us understand what the funding mechanism potentially could be.
877-217-5757. Please call if you'd like to get in under the wire with Kelvin Hill and with Fred Rayford. Reggie in North Baton Rouge. Hi, Reggie. You're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning to everyone. Good morning, Jim, and all the public workers. I have a question for you. At Airline in Greenwell, it's been flooding there before the Walgreens was built. And that's many years ago. When is that going to be corrected?
Well, under the Move BR program, there is a project proposed for that in that location for some turning lanes. And I believe it's a combination problem, for what I understand, of Greenville Springs and also Airline. But the water from the Greenville Springs does drain to Airline, and which is under the state highway control. They are aware of that, and I know it's been a problem for some time. And certainly what we can do from the intersection, we can lease and enhance the drainage and for the turning movements that are going to be needed at that location. But that's what that I'm aware of at this point.
877-217-5757. Thank you, Reggie, in North Baton Rouge. And Kelvin Hill and Fred Rayford are at your service. And here's another listener. This is Hal on Bluebonnet, noting that we have another vote coming that would renew the CATS tax that provides funding for the Capital Area Transportation System. And Hal asks, if more people rode the bus, would we have fewer traffic issues? Is that a good assessment from him?
Well, you know, people are going to be people when they drive, you know, when you're talking about traffic issues or accidents. But, you know, certainly, and I will also say that many people who count and like the bus system, because that's the only way they can get to and from where they need to go. Certainly that, you know, from our perspective, you know, we got to build infrastructure to accommodate not only the traffic, but also the buses and where they pick mm-hmm. up and unload at. Because those are just as important as if where we can get a bus to go to a particular location or not. I mean, I think anybody who chooses to use the bus, there's a reason for that. And that's what we try to do to, as part of the Move BR program, mm-hmm. we want to enhance the capability for people to do that.
But I see those buses going by with few, if any, passengers. And it's a service that I think any community worth its salt needs. But for whatever reason in Baton Rouge, a lot of people don't want to ride the bus.
I understand, Jim, but and quite frankly, that's not really under my control. That's under a different.
But it affects.
It affects the traffic issues, and but we deal with that every day. And our goal and objective is, regardless of how you, if it's a bus or a van or whatever, we want to be able to get you from one location to another very safely. And for people who need to use that infrastructure, the buses, we want to make sure they can get to the bus stops to get on and off of those locations, whether it's a bus, van, or whatever.
Brian in South Downs. Brian, you're on the air with Fred and Kelvin. Hi, Brian.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having this show. And Mr. Rayford, great job you've done all these many years. I'm in the South Downs area. I was at a meeting before with you, and it came up about the question of, I don't know if the name of the company is Asplunk, but the company that does the tree trimming had scalped a few trees in our on our street, and we asked them before they, when they first showed up, if they could be, you know, reasonable about this, and we talked about what specifically, but they came back later and really cut it back. And so I know there's some footage, disc clearances that you have to go with.
All right. What about it, Fred? Thank you, Brian.
Well, you know, certainly utilities, we're not good if we don't make sure the utilities comply with the rules, or we're not. And, you know, the biggest issue you can see is from the storm of Hurricane Ida. It wasn't a rain event. It was a wind event. We lost a lot of power. You looked at where many of these locations where we lost power, it was because of the power lines and the trees that were entangled within the road right away. We tried to make sure that the utility companies can at least maintain the infrastructure they need to have. But also, if you're going, we don't like to see trees scalped to the point, but some cases, depending on the location, there's not much you can do when you meet the certain distance requirements they need to have in these areas, particularly in residential areas.
Joe at LSU. Joe, you're on with Kelvin Hill and Fred Rayford. Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning. How difficult would it have been for Fred Rayford to get with the mayor and the senators and the representatives?
I'm sorry, Joe, are you still there?
And the U.S. both senators, and let them find out what they can find out for free of how much money could come to East Baton Rouge for the drainage and whatever they're trying to do now before they even had to get a consulting company in.
All right.
I didn't hear all of it, Jim, but I will just say that we do communicate very well with the legislative group because, and whether most people understand or not, we're part of the Tributaries Project, which is $250 million project for cleaning and dredging of some of the canals, five major channels. Part of the legislative agreement is to help us get capital outlay money of about $55 million, which has to go through the legislature to get approval for the capital outlay for that. Our match was $50 million for the $255 million. So the legislature is very much involved in on our issues. Not all the local drainage issues, but when they are affecting the state, we certainly work very closely with them and also with the DOTD also.
Now, Kelvin, I think $40 million has been allocated to drainage from the American Rescue Plan. How will that process evolve?
Well, right now we have approval through our council for the first $20 million. Our plans are to procure a program manager. That program manager will work with Fred and his team to put the packages together for the roadside drainage work we have to do, for the ditch digging that we have to do, for the cave-in repairs that we have to make, and help us organize that work, organize the contractors to do that work. And once we get started, we'll keep going until we get that work completed.
Let's try to get in GT and Hundred Oaks before going to the break. GT.
Yes, I'm wondering with the expansion or widening project on the interstate, if there's any plans for noise abatement.
Noise abatement.
The only place that at this point that has been discussed is really around the lakes area itself, for sure, because they were questioning about the impact of the noise that puts off around City Park Lake. Then the other portion that I'm aware of is the the 10 and 12 ramp that's coming that will also be looking at noise abatement issues on that location before you get to college over there by the shopping center.
Well, we thank you, gentlemen, for coming in today, and hopefully we'll have you back soon. You guys know what you're doing, and this is an issue that I think is right there, top one, two, or three, and as far as the importance and relevance and interest in our community. Thank you, Kelvin. Thank you, Fred. We'll return with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. This is day one of the Fall Member Fest, and if you donate $60 during this Member Fest, your thank you gift will allow you to provide 15 meals through the Greater Baton Rouge Food Bank. So we hope you'll contribute, and we hope you'll show your appreciation for the programming that is here every day of the year and has been for the last 41 and a half years. The number is 855-893-9753, 855-893-9753, and you can always go to WRKF.org. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate, is with us, and Monday on this show we heard from Trina Edwards, the widow of Edwin Washington Edwards, and today they are on the front page, a photo taken not long before the death of the Cajun Prince, and the story continues after Edwin Edwards' death on July 12th. His wife had him buried and then had him exhumed and cremated. And the headline, "I Wanted to Bring Him Home." And Mark Ballard and Tyler Bridges, that's the A-team at The Advocate, they covered this story. And people are still interested about Edwin Edwards after his death, the gift that keeps on giving is the Cajun Prince, who dominated headlines for a half century, and it continues. He was elected governor 50 years ago this year, first time, beating Bennett Johnston in the primary by 4,422 votes. And all these years later, Mark, we can't get enough of Edwin Edwards, even in death.
It seems to be the case. It just seems to be the case that there are more stories. There's more interest. It was the most popular story online yesterday and this morning. It's just it's remarkable.
It is, and Edwards' children, three of them are quoted in the story, I believe. The children he had with Elaine Edwards, his first wife, first of three. And they're not very
happy.
Yeah, David was not quoted, but Trina says David's on her side. He's not quoted, but the other three obviously are not on her side. They believe that she did the wrong thing by having him cremated.
Well, yes, that's what they said that they came out. And really, that was kind of what the base of the story was, because as you knew, as you know, why she came earlier this week. Was that there had been a lot of this subterranean accusations and allegations and rumors, and sort of she had hoped to put that aside. But apparently that when she spoke with you on Monday, but apparently that just kind of fueled the flames even more for the other children.
Well, Stephen is quoted in the story as saying his dad did not want to be cremated because he was a Christian and thought that he could not go to heaven if he was cremated. But Edwin Edwards has said on this show more than once that he didn't believe there was a heaven. I asked him where he was going. He said, "I'm going right in the ground." And he did go in the ground for a while, but he was not a believer in a world beyond this one.
Yeah, I think Stephen was saying is that he was a spiritual person, and that he had these beliefs as a spiritual person. You know, I do know that there is a wing of Protestantism that thinks the same way that Stephen explained.
Oh yeah.
And I think that what he was trying to say was that as a spiritual person, that he kind of embraced this idea. But we can't make up quotes, and so we try to explain it the best we could. But I don't think he was saying, you know, that this was that Governor Edwards was a hardened true Christian.
Okay, well, and he was a person who at one time was a Protestant minister. He was a person who was affiliated with the Catholic religion, but in the end, he was for all intents, an atheist, and there's nothing wrong with that. And he was very open about it. And I remember asking him if he prayed when he was in prison. He says, "Why would I pray?" He says, if you jump from a tall building and you start praying on the way down, you're still going to die." and he he had a way of framing things. But I bet if he were here, and he may be here in some way, shape, or form, he would not be pleased with this friction between his wife and his children.
Yeah, I would say that that's probably true. But it certainly has attracted a lot of attention. But I think that a lot of times that this comes out when families, I think that actually Trina had said it well, is that it's an emotional time, and people are on edge, and I think that's maybe what's happening here, too.
877-217-5757 is your number, and yesterday we talked with Lamar White briefly about Steve Scalise, and he was on with Chris Wallace, Fox News Sunday, and some listeners said, "Well, why didn't you play the cut?" And the cut is available, and that was a good suggestion, and that was an omission. So we'll get Mark Ballard to comment on Steve Scalise commenting on the 2020 election with Chris Wallace. Here we go.
U.S. Capitol. Let me ask you one last question in this regard. Clearly, there were irregularities in the last election. There are irregularities in all elections, but I want to ask you a specific question. Do you think the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump?
Well, Chris, I've been very clear from the beginning. If you look at a number of states, they didn't follow their state passed laws that govern the election for president. That is what the United States Constitution says. They don't say that the states determine what the rules are. They say the state legislatures determine the rules.
But the states all certified.
A number of states, they didn't follow those state legislative
rules. The states all certified.
They didn't follow those legislative rules. Right, but at the end of the day, are we going to follow what the Constitution says or not? I hope we get back to what the Constitution says, but clearly in a number of states, they didn't follow those legislatively
set rules. So you think the election was stolen?
What I said is there are states that didn't follow their legislatively set rules. That's what the United States Constitution says.
I guess the question is, do you think the election, last time, I promise, do you think the election was stolen or not? I understand you think there were irregularities and things that need to be fixed. Do you think the election was stolen? Yeah.
And it's not just irregular. It's states that did not follow the laws set, which the Constitution says they're supposed to follow.
The number two Republican.
All right. Well, there we go. Obviously, Steve Scalise is not going to answer that question, and he voted to negate the election. And that's a problem.
Yeah, boy, he protected his goal better than Bernie Perrin from the olden days. So I think, though, what he kept was avoiding actually saying the words that the election was not stolen, and he was relying on this point that that the rules had been changed, implying nefariousness, but actually the rules were changed because of the COVID pandemic. And these are rules that were changed and approved, rightly so, by the secretaries of states in these various states, but also in many of these states, they were endorsed by the legislature. It's just in a few of the states, they did not endorse it. And so he's kind of grabbing this sort of one little string and pulling on that string and trying to make it bigger than it was.
And I hate to beat a dead horse, but Joe Biden got more than 7 million more votes than Donald Trump. And there were some states that were close. And if you flip three of them, it would take three. You'd have to pick the three. And the three that were the closest were Arizona and Georgia and Nevada. If you were to pick those three, conceivably the election could have been decided if Trump the other way, if Trump would have gotten another 100,000 votes. But none of those states were within 10,000 votes of Trump. And this election wasn't anywhere close compared to others, many others, not just one, but let's go to 2000 when Al Gore won the overall vote and lost in Florida by 537 votes. And there was a recount going on, which might have made him the president of the United States. And the Supreme Court, on a one vote margin, 5-4, voted to make George Bush the president. Tim and Thibodeau. Tim, you're on with Mark. Good morning, Tim.
Yes, I just wanted to verify whether there was a quote from Scalise originally that he was David Duke without all the baggage.
Stephanie Grace, who I believe said he told her that's what he said, that he was David Duke without the baggage. Mark?
Yeah, I haven't heard him say that, but I have. I believe Stephanie. I don't think she would make anything like that up.
Henry at the Country Club. Henry, you're on with Mark.
Oh, hello, Mr. Mark. Hello, Mr. Jim. Hope y'all having a great day. I had a question that came to mind from something Mr. Fred and them were talking about, the sound abatement over the I-10 bridge over the LSU lakes. I guess Senator Cassidy can't vote yay or nay on that because that might be unethical. But then I look at the assessment on Mr. Cassidy's house. We had talked about that before. It was in the $358,100 range. But lo and behold, it's gone up to $961,800 for 2021. I guess that belly-aching about it kind of got a little action.
I bet Cassidy asked for a reassessment because it was giving him some grief, and God bless him. Not many people would do that. And Cassidy, every now and then, he goes against the grain. I saw him out in front of his house the other day, his white hair glistening and big smile on his face, waving at passerby. He looks like a man who's content with life right now. And why wouldn't he be, living in a $1 million house on the LSU lakes with a beautiful family and a 6-year term, Mark Ballard?
Yeah. And actually that reassessment was about a year ago, but it was, right after there were a whole lot of complaints about, you know, gee whiz, my assessment is higher kind of complaints.
So, well, that is wonderful news. That is wonderful news. That
And I wouldn't make it. At one point, I just made a passing comment to one of his aides about how his bushes had gotten out into the.
All right. We want to find out about the bushes at Senator Cassidy's house on Dalrymple Drive. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Mark Ballard of The Advocate's with us for a few more minutes, opining about matters of importance near and far. And one of the matters that came up during a conversation with Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana, who's fascinated about what's going on at the gates of LSU, is Senator Bill Cassidy's house. And Mark and I live close to the senator, who can be seen walking around the lakes with his dog on times when he's at home. But you were saying there were bushes hanging out in the street. Was that what you were saying, Mark?
Yeah, I guess my point being was that he does listen, because I had just mentioned that in passing to one of his aides, that the bushes were hanging over one lane of the bike and walking path that is there on Dalrymple, and causing people to kind of have to step out into the street. And within days, it was cut back. It was more one of those, you know, you don't really notice it kind of thing, and you let it go. But as soon as it was brought to his attention, he jumped on it.
Well, he's a man who believes in constituent service. Gustavo in Goodwood. Gustavo, you're on with Mark. Good morning.
Good morning to you, gentlemen. Well, let's not forget that NPR and WRKF and the rest of the liberal media were bombarding constantly that Joe Biden was the place to go to vote. And that's why we have the disaster that we have in our hands with this idiot that doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what his right cheek is from the left. He's an idiot, and you should recognize that.
All right, Gustavo, you sound like a man of immense intelligence, so I'm sure you would be able to gauge the respective intelligence of President Biden, President Trump. But I can tell you, I know of no case in which anybody at this station or any other NPR affiliate who was asking people or urging people to vote for Joe Biden who was a member of the staff. Now, there may be guests, but of course there are members or guests who are voting, urge people to vote for Donald Trump as well. And a lot of people did, about 75 million, and I have a feeling Gustavo was in that number, and he did carry Louisiana by 400,000 votes. So Donald Trump has some mojo, and he's going to keep on going, there's no doubt about it, until he's stopped, and at this point, he's eligible to run again.
Well, and that is, yeah, I mean, that is true. I mean, the one thing that I keep hearing the same line from a whole lot of people, but the one thing I have to say is that one incident of fraud that was large enough to change 10,000 votes. Show me one. And there have been many that have been floated out before, about 80 some odd judges, and not a single one of them is stuck.
And remember, when we're talking about a margin of more than 10,000 in every state won by Biden, that means that in order for the election to have been fraudulent, every one of the fraudulent votes would have had to have been for Biden and not one for Trump. And there has been no evidence at all that there is any widespread voter fraud. And yet people like Steve Scalise will not embrace the fact that Joe Biden won the election fair and square and is the 46th president of the United States. But Mark, it's always good to catch up with you, and we'll be calling again next Thursday. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks. We'll see you later.
I'm glad you got the bushes out of the bike lane at Senator Cassidy's home. So Mark is always a treat. Now, for those who are listening and near a telephone, we'd like to hear from you, 855-893-9753. In our remaining time, please show your support for WRKF. And when you contribute for this hour of programming, we certainly take note of it, because we love it when you are showing in a tangible way that you support the 9 to 10 hour. And thanks to Rachel Jania, Ryan Sintier, Travis Spaulding, and Olivia Stewart. I know most of these people, and all donations are doubled right now. Thanks also to Donna Ramirez and to Sadira August. So thank you for contributing to WRKF. Rachel, Ryan, Travis, Olivia, and Sadira, all within the last few moments. And again, the number is 855-893-9753. We're joined now by a gentleman who knows Wall Street. And there was a time on Wall Street when index funds were not part of the mix, and now they are a huge part. And Robin Wigglesworth is the Financial Times Global Finance Correspondent. And he shares in a new work the incredible true story of how a band of Wall Street renegades invented the index fund, and by doing so, changed finance forever. It's called Trillions, How a Band of Wall Street Renegades Invented the Index Fund and Changed Finance Forever. Robin, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing well. Well, the index funds are now... I mean, my goodness, we're talking trillions of dollars in assets. How did it all start?
Well, it all started in 1971 with the first index fund. But the layup to it, you know, was decades in gestation. So essentially, you know, people always maybe suspected that some fund managers weren't really up to the job, that some of them weren't doing that well. But we didn't really know what the overall stock market did. And we couldn't measure what all fund managers did either. But that all changed with the advent of the computer era. So in the 60s, people for the first time were able to, you know, rent mainframe computers to start crunching all the data. They started collecting it, sometimes manually, from old Wall Street journals and barons. And they found that, lo and behold, stocks were actually, yes, a great long-term investment, but no, the average fund manager actually does far worse than the market, especially after its costs, after the cost of paying for a fund manager, their traders and analysts. So then a motley group of, you know, later on financial economic superstars gathered at Wells Fargo in the late 60s and early 70s and invented the very first index fund. And that's where everything else flowed from, really.
This so-called passive investing, it didn't take off like wildfire, but in over time, just like most investments go, if they're going in the right direction, over time it's worth, what's the estimate now as far as the trillions of dollars that are invested in index funds?
Well, so we know the universe of public funds, actual formal mutual funds or exchange-traded funds, the newfangled version of them, is around $17 trillion. So that's obviously huge. But that actually still underestimates the heft of index strategies. So not everything is in a formal fund that you can buy on Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch, for example, or TD Ameritrade. A lot of this stuff is actually internally at sovereign wealth funds in the Gulf or big pension plans like CalPERS and CalSTRS. A lot of these people have the technological know-how to do it themselves. They don't need to hire a money manager to do it. And if you add up all of that, then I've cobbled together various data sources, and I estimate it to be around $26 trillion globally. And that's probably a conservative estimate.
And Robin Wigglesworth, the global finance correspondent of the Financial Times, notes that the three biggest index fund providers, BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, manage almost $20 trillion. That's accounting for about a quarter of all shareholder votes cast in the United States. So these are powerful entities, aren't they?
Hugely so. I mean, it's a consequence of the good thing about index funds, that they are cheap. But one index fund is just like another one. So Vanguard's S&P 500 index fund that invests in the 500 biggest companies in America is just the same as their rivals. They do exactly the same thing. So the only thing you can compete on is price. But it also means that they're really cheap to run. So at a certain point, you know, all the money you make is just clean profit. You can plow that into making it cheaper and cheaper. So that is great for us as end consumers, but it means that the big have an advantage over the small. So the big get bigger and bigger. And BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street are the big three when it comes to index funds. And in reality, it's a duopoly. Vanguard and BlackRock are just way bigger and growing faster than State Street. And I think at some point, maybe we might start getting worried about just how much economic power is accruing in those two investment groups.
Well, you note that there's some backlash against this force that some may legitimately fear will comprise the health of financial markets and the broader economy and affects capitalism as we know it. So where do we go from here?
It's a good question. I have, sadly, no good answers. It's something I end up doing a lot of chin scratching on. Broadly speaking, I think it's important to remember, as Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, said, he was worried about this before he passed away, but he felt that we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Index funds is an enormously beneficial invention that has saved millions of Americans hundreds of billions of dollars directly. And if we include the indirect savings, we are talking trillions of dollars. This is just one of the few, if not only, positive, genuinely positive invention that's come out of the financial industry for many decades. But that doesn't mean that with, like any good, positive new technology, we should be blind to the potential downsides. We should try to recognize them, diagnose them, and maybe try to ameliorate them where possible. I'm not sure what we should do, but there are some concerns around the edges that even I, as a huge fan of index funds, do have.
Well, it's an important book, Trillions, How a Band of Wall Street Renegades Invented the Index Fund and Changed Finance Forever, from Robin Wigglesworth, who's been following the trends and activities on Wall Street and beyond for several decades. Robin, thank you. Congratulations on your work.
Hey, Robin,
And we've got to go, we thank First Financial Tax and Accounting Service for providing signature support. Thanks for your support for WRKF. Stay safe, stay tuned.